always wanted to know who the best player was on tour simply because I wanted to actually work as hard. And then I ran into a little guy by the name of George Knutson out of Canada. And I watched him hit the golf ball. I watched him with the wide stance, making the club back way inside, releasing the club. One of the greatest ball strikers I'd ever seen.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the McKellar Golf Podcast, Take 3. I'm here, Lauren Stonigan, with my co-host, Jeff Shackelford. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great, and can consider yourself spared of Takes 1 and 2, audience. Thank you, Lawrence. It's great to be here.
Right. Well, before we get on with the show, Jeff, a very quick announcement or sponsor slot for everybody's listening to the show. It's a good deal, actually, at McKellarMagazine.com. If you haven't yet read any of our magazines, or your collection is a couple short, or you want a beautiful McKellar t-shirt in all sorts of colors, go to mckellarmagazine.com. And here's the deal. Once you get to the checkout, if you in the discount box or the code box, if you put in the word podcast, that's capital letters podcast, you will get free shipping to anywhere in the world. That's a pretty sensational deal. So hopefully you will make use of it and support a great golf writing. That's a pretty good deal, Jeff, isn't it?
I definitely. I mean, shipping is expensive. My gosh. Especially priority mail. Holy cow.
Yeah. So anywhere in the world as well. That even includes Australia. My goodness.
Wow.
I know. Anyway, we are getting ready for issue 8, Jeff. So we really need to get ourselves together and get some financial heft behind the magazine so we can pay all our writers really, really well. Okay, that's enough of that nonsense. We will move on with the show. Big week, Jeff. Home game for you, Riviera Country Club. Hang on a minute. Is it the Genesis or the Genesis? What is it?
The Genesis? What the? Where do you get that? It's the Genesis. Jesus, I didn't know that word was that hard.
Yeah, I'm not up with car. I'm not like a car freak like you and Ian Poulter.
They're not one of those goofy brands that comes up with some, you know, they're not Johnny Ive coming up with aluminium. It's Genesis. It's a very common word. It's got biblical origin. Jeez, I can't even believe I have to tell you how it's pronounced. They make beautiful cars. The company is called Genesis. And yes, they are the sponsor this week.
You sound like such a supercilious tit.
No, anyway. No. You would know more. If I had a nice courtesy car, or if I'd gotten a nice deal on a lease, I would really be. But they're beautiful cars, you know. They really are. They're beautiful.
Right, here's the test for you. Who's the head of marketing at Genesis Motor
I don't
Company?
Know. Why would I know who the chief marketing officer is?
I mean, the way you're pushing them, I would have thought you...
No, see, there you go. I just answered your question. I'm not playing in the Pro-Am tomorrow. There are media members in the Pro-Am. I'm not one of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They do that. Right,
let me guess.
You wouldn't. You'll never guess. Let's move on. There's a lot to talk about. Right. Come on.
Well, yeah. Anyway, right. Okay.
It doesn't matter. The property is closed to the public for the Pro-Am, which... Now that is lame. I mean, that is just awful, especially in a town where the Pro-Am way back in the 70s was as big of a deal as the tournament, because I'm going to really date myself. But, you know, people came out to watch Peter Falk and James Garner and Jerry West and Glenn Campbell and Andy Williams and whatever, whoever was the cool person of the moment. But now the gates are locked and the Pro-Am is a private affair. It's just part of this kind of move to soullessness that is the PGA Tour. And we can discuss that, but man, is it apparent when you're out there. Wow. What a trajectory they are on.
So is that a normal thing, Jeff? Do they always close for the Pro-Am day?
It has been the last few years. And it's just shocking because you see some of the, I mean, God, you know, some of the celebrities who have been playing with no crowd is just, and then people find out, like, oh my gosh, John McEnroe's out there, and Albert Pujols is out there, and Jared Goff is out there.
No way.
Oh yeah, we've had. I mean, well, it's Tiger. People want to. Tiger gets amazing people. Larry Fitzgerald usually plays. The football player who, you know, plays all the Pro-Ams, whatever. Great guy though, and very fan friendly and all that. So yeah, no, it's despicable and it's pathetic. But this is, I mean, practice rounds are not available to the public either, Lawrence. It's just this is the model It's just kind of moving to this elitist mindset. It's a private affair. Our very important customers don't want to be watched and blah, blah, blah. It's just sad when you know, a golf tournament is supposed to be this, it kind of builds and these little things happen and they're just, you know, they've just been stripping that away from it. And it's a tournament that dates to 1926. It was an open with 156 players back in January. And now it's, you know, we're at the, it's just kind of just part of the trend to move to this very clubby, I don't know, exclusionary kind of model. And it's, it bums me out. You know, this used to be a tournament that was played at Rancho Park. It was a people's event. And obviously the People's Open has now moved to Scottsdale. And I understand that there are probably listeners going, oh, they literally call it that. And I know there are listeners going, well, that worked out well. There's some place in the middle of last week and this week. And the great tournaments, I think, find that. And, you know, we know that who they are, the Travelers of the World and so on.
So who's playing the Pro-Am? We're speaking here on late on Tuesday evening. Who's playing the Pro-Am tomorrow?
I have no idea. And it will take me... I will have to use my best private investigative skills tomorrow to actually procure a pairing sheet. You're laughing, but I'm dead serious. That pairing sheet is like gold now at this event, and I've gotten it. I get a kick out of it. I acquire one, and I take note of who's playing. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see if the commissioner plays, who knows.
We will reveal all next week, hopefully. So the media is allowed in on, of course they are, because the press conferences are tomorrow. I'm really looking forward to Rory McIlroy's press conference this week.
He's not on the schedule, Lawrence. He's not a former winner. Yeah, and our last two winners are also not coming to the press room.
And where might they be?
They'll have their feet up on a table, relaxing after their busy first 2 weeks playing the LIV Golf League Tour thing.
I only raise the Rory thing. I mean, he really has checked out of Team PGA Tour.
Yeah.
I saw him briefly interviewed on the Golf Channel today. He's really nice little interview with Kira Dixon, I think her name is.
Yeah,
really good. And but he is certainly not on Team J anymore. Good for him. I think I would feel the same. I would have a lot less grace than he does at this stage, given the way that he was treated by AJ Monahan and Jimmy Dunn and all the gang. I do notice, Jeff, I don't know if I can't remember if we talked about it. There was a bit of a I think it was Alec. Oh, was that? So Rory's no longer on the text chain. The big player text chain. I think we spoke about that briefly last week. He is. I he was speaking about his decision this year to play a lot, and he seems really into it. He'll be one to watch this week, I would imagine.
One note on Rory.
Yep.
I saw him walk by today. I haven't had a chance to talk to him, but he was out Monday. Brad Faxon was out with him, and he was out again today. So he did not. He's not rolling into this thing on late Tuesday night and turn it out for the Pro-Am. He's shown up ready to work, and you know, he's had some good rounds at Riviera. He loves the golf course, and he loves coming to L.A. And he obviously nearly won the U.S. Open last year. So I expect a good week from him.
I noticed from the tee sheet for Thursday that he is playing with Max Homa and somebody else. I can't remember who.
Wyndham Clark. It's a great pairing, by the way. Great pairing for Rory. And we know that's important. That's a really fun group for him. Those guys are.
Yeah.
I did speak to Wyndham Clark a little bit today, and he's just a really nice guy. And he's very down to earth. So I'd call that the down to earth threesome. They're the guys who are a little bit still grounded in reality.
I saw last year Rory was, of course, paired with Tiger and JT. He's no longer on team Tiger. So it's Tiger, JT, and Woodland are playing. What is going on? Does Tiger just play with Justin Thomas and that's it?
Now, I'm not up on the intricacies of the signature event policies. Oh. There are some elements to pairings for the. I'm defending the rules staff here.
Yeah,
like the pro am tomorrow. Tiger doesn't go till 8:30. You know, he usually grabs that first tee time, and last year he did. And it was one of the coldest things I've ever experienced in my life walking with him. It was a 35 mile an hour Santa Ana wind and freezing. And everybody was miserable, but he did a good job keeping a smile on his face at times and talking to us. And but he's at 8:30 tomorrow, and that may be related to his status as a sponsor invite. And obviously Thomas is not in, he's in on whatever one of that stupid Aon thing that are anyway. And then Gary Woodland's a sponsor invite, so it may be related to their status, but yeah, the tour just loves to pair him with the brother he never had, and it's a bit much.
I guess his achievements and career probably entitles him to that, but it's, you know, you get to play with the guy you're most comfortable with every. What if you play with a couple of guys you thought were complete and utter dicks? That might like everybody else has to do occasionally. Speaking of Tiger, are you excited? Come back number, I don't know what it is for Tiger.
The body language was kind of weird today. I followed him for he played the back nine, and he's older. And but I'll tell you what, Lawrence, what still continues to be so impressive is that he is showing that like the follow through, he doesn't have quite the tilt, and the flexibility is not there in the upper body, and it doesn't look like he's hitting it that hard. And then you see where when he connects, he still is way out there. So I think he may be a little rusty, but I just continue to be blown away by somebody who had all these swing issues, and the swing is just not the issue anymore. It's the body and the putter, and the swing repeats and it looks beautiful. He can hit whatever shot he wants. And that part is just wild to me. After everything we went through during the Hank Haney years and the Chris Cuomo years and the tinkering and all that, that part is impressive.
Let's not besmirch the Hank Haney years. He was pretty successful during those years.
He was, but the ball went all over the place.
The Chris Cuomo years, however, that might be worth it. A podcast or three.
Years might have been a little strong there. It may be more like the months, the Chris Cuomo months. But he's doing fine. He's still a very sought after instructor. So yeah, he's survived it just fine.
The I know there's a school of thought that the backswing really doesn't matter, but my goodness, just seeing video on various social media platforms, the position at the top looks so good.
Yeah, and the rhythm, the rhythm too.
Oh my goodness,
beautiful.
You weren't there when he made his debut, Jeff. I think he was 16, wasn't he?
I was in college, so I did not. I came down for the weekend that year, but I was not able to be there for the actual debut, where he was playing as a sponsor invitation. In a full field event, it should be noted. I just thought I'd point that out, but.
We're on Tiger. I guess we should maybe briefly, not that either of us. Well, you're a pretty stylish guy. I'm certainly not. The other big news was the launch of Tiger's new clothing line, apparel line, whatever you want to call it. It's widely mocked as Sunday Red. You were there, Jeff. How did he look on TV? On the little shots that they showed on Golf Central, I thought he looked pretty good in that kit. No, did I got that wrong, or was it awful?
Are you referring to on course or at the rollout thing?
Oh, I didn't see any of that.
You missed incredible entertainment from that. If you didn't see that, he looked. Well, do you really want me to be honest here? Do you want me to? His pants fit like crap. They were too long. They were too tight in the thighs. He's a slacks guy. He's a little bit of a. I mean, he just. I didn't think he looked comfortable in them, and they were too long. Really? How did a tailor not? I mean, they're just too long, and they're tight in the thighs, and that hideous logo's all over the place. And there you go. That's my assessment. I don't know what's going on here. It's a strange one because he's pretty meticulous about these kinds of things. And wow, it's just a bad rollout, bad reviews.
Well, hang on. So tell me why it's a bad rollout, Jeff. Tell me why.
Well, they convene people at this thing in the Pacific Palisades, and the CEO of TaylorMade's getting up there, just spouting some of the greatest corporate jargon gobbledygook you've ever heard in your life.
He's
talking about how, you know, this is totally separate from TaylorMade, totally separate from TaylorMade, which the code is, yeah, we're not really very stylish at TaylorMade. And then he's telling you how the people report to, they're going to report to him. And then he's going on about, they're not going to be at, they're going to be in San Clemente, which is apparently the new, it's the Milan of California, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what the inference was there, but he kept wanting to let us know they're separate from us, but they're reporting to us, and we've always wanted to do this. And he was just using these words. It was embarrassing. And then Tiger gets up there, and yeah, we're going to have a cashmere hoodie. Nobody's ever done a cashmere hoodie. Of course, the last two American Ryder Cup teams, of the one item that the guys would probably, you know, take home with them, they will be hugging and not letting anybody touch, are the cashmere hoodies, which you could also buy online. Like Kiger, everybody makes a hoodie now. And by the way, Lawrence, big note, you know, I'm a connoisseur of PGA Tour vice presidential fashion. The Oxford is out. It is cashmere hoodies for the Tour VPs too now. Yeah, it's the new white belt. So just the whole rollout, Erin Andrews, and she's trying to crack jokes, and this horrible logo with this goofy name, Sun, the new word day.
That's
red.
Hang on. Yeah. So that, what, there's something going on there, isn't there? I suspect, or looking at that, somebody must have, you know, trademarked Sunday Red.
Yeah. I'm so let me be clear. I think the name Sunday Red is brilliant. I mean, that is just a brilliant brand. No brainer. The problem is Nike is famous for trademarking everything. I mean, they may even own Tiger's name in some way in a trademark. I think there was a skater recently who they'd let leave, and he then wanted to do some stuff and ran into trouble. So they are very creative in their trademark office. So that's got to be the explanation, because it's just so weird. And then the weird logo that looks like a comb or a Slazenger Tiger turned into a comb, and then the letters SD are in just this bland font and not crisp. And then, you know, I had all these fashion people sending me the stuff they photographed for the rollout. The stitching was bad. It was crooked, off center. So the gist, you know, the takeaway is that this was a little bit rushed. And so that kind of tells you that,
because there's no product available right now. So why
most incredible thing, when you talk to people in the clothing, the golf clothing thing, when you know, they run out of something that is just red hot. It's like, well, we just don't know how many to make. Well, one of the great things about this rollout should have been that they would have had these items on a website, and maybe they're not available to May until May. But at least you could let people order. And by the way, then you'd actually know how many to make of these things. But they don't seem to be, as I understand it, really, the website is just really basic. I haven't checked back today, but I did look yesterday, and it's just kind of like, come back in May and we'll show you what we got. So it just feels rushed. That said, he was wearing a pair of shoes that are going to be part of this brand, and making a shoe is not a quick and easy process. So I don't know. It just the whole thing felt weird. But my overall take was that the Nike partnership may have ended a little before he expected it to end. And we've discussed, I think, the Nike situation a little. Lawrence, they have a massive truck on site with all the other tour vans just for shoes and clothes. So they don't look to me like a company getting out of the golf business anytime soon. It's semi. This is not some little, you know, little food truck. This is a big operation. And I saw Tommy Fleetwood leaving it with a bag full of gear. And so they're not leaving golf yet, like they did with the equipment side of things.
I know the Air Jordan golf shoes are very, very popular, and
yeah,
they look pretty good actually. Yeah, I didn't. Again, I wouldn't in no way expect anybody to take anything that I said about clothing or shoes seriously.
No,
I thought the really, you were a bit quick to agree with that. But yeah, I didn't. I thought Tiger shoes were pretty ugly too. I'm not a fan of black golf shoes in general. But there you go. Yes, the logos. I mean, in terms of branding, bad name. Oof. Bad logo. The logo is too complicated, I think, visually. Mm. I mean, the T, when you look at something like the TW, it's clean and it's instantly, the connection's instantly there. When if you didn't see the logo in Tiger's personage, then you would have no idea what it is.
And I think it stands out as especially horrific because we've seen so many cool logos now in golf, and there's so many talented people creating logos and courses doing things that are more subtle, and they have real meaning related to the course. So we're actually in this sort of little, I mean, this sounds ridiculous, but the golden age of golf logos. And then he comes out with this.
Yeah,
we really are. I mean, there's really cool stuff. And then he comes out with this and, you're like, wow, this is who's going to want to. And it's basically like the shark logo got. And
that's right.
I don't see who's going to want this. And of course, it doesn't sound like the stuff's going to be very affordable. Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that would have been really fun is the Tigers say, hey, you know, we're going to do something, but we're going to make it really affordable. I want kids wearing this. And yeah, I got the opposite from the rollout. I got they want the private equity guys who have 14 club memberships to want to aspire to wear this. And, I got bad news for them. There are way too many great brands out there, you know, B. Dreddy and Holiness and Born and Johnny O and Peter Millar and on and on and on who are making great stuff that, those people will be wearing and not this.
The buzz phrase for me, I noticed somewhere in a press release or something that a premium brand, I think the CEO of TaylorMade called it a premium brand, which is code for,
expensive.
Code for expensive. The other little snippet, I was chatting to a guy today who's been in that world of high-end golf wear for quite a long time. And I better be careful here, but I don't think he's terribly impressed with the personnel behind the launch of this particular brand, the people involved in it. I don't think record.
Lawrence, they're going to feed off that energy in San Clemente. They're going to get that San Clemente creative vibe. The CEO, you didn't watch the CEO. You need to watch him. David Abel is talking about.
Right.
No, you got to watch it, though. You've got to watch it. The jargon is epic. I mean, Tim Finchem in his prime could never have come up with some of these words. It's glorious stuff.
Really?
All right, let's talk golf.
Yeah. The other, a couple of things. Let's talk golf course. You are, of course, the author of the acclaimed biography of George Thomas, responsible for this, the great golf course that they're playing on this week. A couple of changes, Jeff. I noticed you moaning about them somewhere. I wasn't moaning.
Where was I moaning? I didn't moan.
Well, this is before you saw them. I think it's the 10th green, famous 10th green, and the 15th green. Infamous. What do you think? You saw them today? You saw them yesterday? What's happened? Well, I don't care about the 15th green. Nobody cares about the 15th green.
What do you mean? It's one of the greatest greens in golf. It's important. Well, yeah.
Yeah. What about the 10th green? What have they done there? Hopefully they haven't made it easier.
They probably have, maybe. I'm not quite ready to commit to that. But, you know, the problem is, Lawrence, it's become a little bit of a freak show, in part because of the way it's evolved with bunker sand and modern green speeds. And I'm writing a whole piece in the newsletter about this that'll be out by the time this podcast is out. And I even did video, Lawrence. It's quite exciting. Big step for the quadrilateral. Audio's, the talent forgot to make sure to keep staring at the iPhone when talking. So a couple times the audio is not great, but it just has not evolved very well. And you throw in the way modern speeds work, And so it has turned into a little freak show. The club's made some weird choice changes, and then of course they just the hole's a par three. It's too short. Anyway, the short version is I think they have brought back a couple of great hole locations, and that's exciting because it's gotten a little bit one dimensional on the hole location front. There's nothing they can do about the distance issue, so I think it's going to be technically I would my guess my hunch would be more guys should lay up. But as you know, they're all addicted to their data now, and the data tells them to bomb it up there and then gouge around. And I've had some really interesting chats with a couple of players and Frank Nabilo, and I need to investigate the idea of explaining. You know, golf's at that point where they're still so hooked on the data, Lawrence, the players and the people around them. Whereas you're starting to see analytics and other sports people go, okay, all right, the analytics are good. But sometimes, just sometimes, you've got to go by gut feel, situation. You really have to think about stress. And that's what I don't get about the 10th hole is players bring on stress by driving it, and they could take stress out of their life laying up 4 days. Now, I say that assuming a guy is confident with a wedge in his hand. And we know a lot of the modern players with the modern ball. Are not maybe the greatest wedge players, but like Nick Taylor, who just won in Scottsdale and avoided becoming the next Chip Beck as as Brad Faxon randomly suggested when he laid up on 15 Sunday, is a great wedge player. I'll be curious to see if he actually lays up and hits a wedge, or Justin Thomas or Tiger, but they're not as good from that distance anymore. So I think it's a hard thing to get the holes dynamics back and the options back without lengthening it. So I will say though, I'm just happy that the two greens, the modifications didn't radically alter them. They're very subtle, but good subtle, and trying to get some nuanced elements back. And that's why I was a little nervous about the changes. But and then 15 is just a beautiful green. And but it had this great traditional back right hole location. I mean, imagine if 16 at Augusta they lost the great back left pin to modern speeds and they didn't adjust to it. Well, they have, and same thing at Riviera. They've lost this for almost 15 years now. And I spent time with the tour rule staff, and they just don't want to see putts. Two things. I don't want to see them take a hard turn at the hole, like a really hard turn. And then in this case, and a 10 green, you had situations where if the ball hit the cup the wrong way and took a hard turn, it'd go way down a slope and it turned into like a freak show situation. So they're trying to get rid of that. And so I think that's all good. The course is in great shape. It's very green. It firmed the greens firmed up and sped up a little bit today. I still think there's going to be an extremely low score. It's just in too good a shape. The weather forecast is pretty benign. The players are too good. The equipment's too good. The equipment's too juiced. There's just too many good players in this field, even without the various former winners, which of which there are many who are gone. There are just too many good players. I really do think there's a 59 out there on
Oh, geez.
a benign morning.
That would be depressing.
Why?
It
Now
would
let
be
me ask
an
you
instant.
why. Why?
Wow.
I mentioned it to a few people, and they think I'm saying that like to insult the course. I'm like, why? That's just the reality. Why is a 59 bad?
Again, it's just you are right. I guess you're right, but it's like a 59 in the on the old course. It's just, please no. I mean, I get the guys are great and somebody plays a great round. Well, then have a 63. But to go and shoot 59 at Riviera or 59 in the old course, I mean, it all doesn't turn golf into a joke, but it's a kind of silly number on what's meant to be one of the great golf courses in the world and one of the tougher golf. Well, all, I think, yeah,
Could
I'm
be.
rightly saying it. It could be one of the tougher golf courses on the PGA Tour. I just don't. It's just not. I mean, I don't mind some guy goes and shoots 57 on a golf course in Colombia or whatever, but I mean, not at Riviera. That would just be too much, and slightly demeaning to the golf course, I think.
Yeah, I guess
Really,
that's why I got the looks I got. I wasn't meaning, and I didn't mean it to be demeaning. I just think it's the reality of the world we're in. Juiced equipment, great
The
players,
equipment.
unbelievable conditioning. I mean, you just, I think that's the part that's hard to explain. I guess from my perspective is knowing how Riviera used to be, and it was a factory, and knowing how good it is now, and I view that as a positive, but people forget to factor in what that means to a good player to have consistent role, consistent lies. So I guess that's where we it's harder to explain to people. It's a
The
compliment to
other
the conditioning of the course in a lot of ways when I say a 59 is out there.
the I just gotta compliment the players as well, Jeff. There are,
Yes, no, I am.
I
Yeah,
know.
yeah.
I mean, there really are, and I know we make fun of the conditioning and the athleticism, but they really, I mean, you look at, well, you were with Wyndham Clark today. I mean, he looks like an athlete. He looks like he could play about five or six different sports. He is something else, and there's quite a lot of those guys
Well,
around. Anyway, I hope.
you're leaving out the key. He hits it pretty far. He used
Yeah,
to,
he
I think,
does.
and but he could putt. And there aren't, I mean, you, I, by the way, I want, I really almost should put blinders on as I walk by the putting green because I just don't want to see what some of the contraptions are and the cockamamie stuff that guys do. I mean, it is tin cup kind of level stuff on the putting green. And I was having this chat with somebody today about, Justin Thomas, and he's kind of getting back to it's just his dad. He's trying to get back to just being who he was. And you just think, gosh, just the same old thing. Just have little putting games and putting contests and stop overthinking it. But it's seeing some of these other devices and tools and sitting in the same spot for an hour, and
Well, that's BS.
it is, and
That
it's why
is
you have a lot of
not,
very mediocre putters. But it's why you have what have we seen the last on the West Coast swing? We've seen the guys who are rolling that ball. They're just on another level, and we saw it last week with both Charlie Hoffman and Nick Taylor, but especially Nick Taylor. And we saw it with Wyndham Clark at Pebble, and I think we'll see it this week. Fewer players, by the way, on the POA greens, fewer excuses to blame the POA. But I mean, look at Scottie Scheffler. I mean, every putt he's getting like Djokovic or the tennis players, where the putt doesn't go in, and he immediately is looking to Ted Scott. With the old, like, what? Yeah, it's just like, and that's, by the way, making tennis unwatchable. And if all the golfers start doing that, it's gonna be really,
Well,
really tough to watch
I
too.
was ch chatting to somebody about Scheffler the other day, and the golf is odd. You can be a great player, but generally speaking, if you look through history, the really, really the greats, the true greats, the Tiger, Nicklaus, whatever, they could do everything. They were great ball strikers. They hit it far and they putted great. And the guys below that tier, they're generally lacking something. And Scheffler's ball striking is up. If you look at the numbers now, but it's right up there with Tiger in his prime.
It's crazy.
I was just, I was listening to, I think it was Nolan up there, and he made a really good point. He remember when everybody was freaking out about Morikawa's ball striking. Scheffler's numbers are far superior.
They're
And but if
amazing.
you look. If you look at Scheffler's numbers, he's all right across his game. He has always been a mediocre putter. He just has. I think he came out in 18 or something. He's been within that minus 0.5 to plus 0.5 in that inside that strokes gained in that window since he came out as a pro. And I think what's changed is become a better ball striker and his expectations have gone up. But I just think he's just a guy. He's a great player and he's just never going to be. Is never going to be a great putter. In the weeks where he's above the Maginot line and he's in the plus numbers putting, then he probably tends to win or really come close. And the week that he's below it, he's finishing the top 10. It's
And but the
go
problem,
on.
we know, you and I are old enough to know, we've seen players like this before, and they just hit so many greens and it just wears them down, and they and then it and they start pressing even more. And I mean, his speed on Sunday at Phoenix was just awful on some of these putts that he missed. And again, he's looking at like what went on here, and you're like, dude, did you see how far that went by the hole on a 5-6 footer? Like, maybe it was user error. Just saying, maybe a little more touch. And then, but, and I know Crenshaw worked with him a little at the Walker Cup back about grip pressure. And But when you see the speed like that, you just know he's just is there's a tension of holding it and pressing and pushing and that's the thing is how do you have that perspective to go, okay, I like what you just said, that I'm going to be good every week, and I just going to be weeks I'm not going to have the putter going, but I am going to have enough that it's going to be it's good, life is good, all's well. But it's hard I guess when you I have no comprehension of what it's like to hit 16 greens every day. I can't relate.
I will be fascinated to see the trajectory of Scheffler's career, because he's always going to be a mediocre putter, and I just wonder. You know, he obviously his ball striking is magnificent right now, but I just the way his technique is not classical, and I just wonder how long that holds up. It relies a lot on timing, but maybe he'll be able to sustain it for a long period of time. But generally, looking at that golf swing, I just don't see how he keeps it going for an extended period. But right now, he is just absolutely fantastic. Here, Jeff, I still want to quickly on this week. The 70 players in the field, it's a signature event. 70 players in the field, there's a cut. How about this cut then, Jeff? Just talk me through this. Is it top 50 in ties? Is it and or within 10 shots of the leader?
And, I guess it and is, within 10 of the lead.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. So basically, we could have, I mean, because guys don't tend to separate themselves these days. Everybody's. So we could be looking at 65 guys making the cut.
Yep.
Five guys going home. that would be it. Well, how many AMs are in the field? Is there a couple of AMs?
No AMs. No. We've gotten rid of everything. This is a signature event, Lawrence. We've gotten rid of all that riffraff that made it interesting.
That's a real shame. So the guy from the college showcase doesn't get in this year.
He gets in the Genesis Scottish Open. The guy from Boise State. Yeah, I hope they have a good NIL program, because it's not cheap to fly over there.
Well, I'm guessing whoever bought the spot for Boise State in the qualifier.
Yeah, I guess I'll have him hawking used cars at the lot for him to justify paying for it. But so I guess the one positive, if you'd like a positive from this new thing, is everybody tees off on number one. No more split tees. Although the weekend, I did speak to the rule staff today. They need to see how many make the cut, and they've got the CBS signing off at 4 o'clock thing on Saturday and 3:30 Sunday. So they may go split tees on the weekend, but we have threesomes all off the first tee, and we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I mean, all these little things they take away. They used to have the SCPGA had a qualifier and a Monday qualifier, and you had your collegiate showcase champion playing in the field, which replaced the old amateur qualifying.
Who got that spot? Who are past winners of that showcase? Didn't Zalatoris win that one year?
The Gala and Sahith Will Zalatoris both are former winners of that, which speaks to what a cool thing it is. And once again, another thing kind of really killed off by the signature event thing. And also, I mean, you have a lot of good programs are playing a college event this week. So I don't know, even if there was a spot in the Genesis, how much that would have impacted the quality of the field. As you know, there's some really good college events this week. So it's, but to me, it just takes away a little something about from the character of the event.
Yeah. I think losing right these the cut thing is just, I mean, talk about lip service.
Yeah. I was pretty excited about the Tiger held out for the cut, but then when you get into the fine print, it's kind of funny. So, I mean, it's funny and it's sad. So, we'll see. But as you say, as you know, there's a lot of parity out there right now, and the golf course is in great shape. The weather, you don't see any big things in the forecast suggesting one afternoon's going to really have a trouble. So I think a lot of guys will make the cut, and the course is so good. The conditioning. Yeah, I mean, you just aren't going to have any guys who just kind of lose it over bumpy bad greens or thin fairways. There's just no excuse. There is a little more rough this year because of the rain we had both in the summer, which made the Kikuyu maybe pop a little more. I mean, they're trimming it, but it's a good rough in that it's gonna alter a few shots if you miss some fairways, but not hack out stuff or anything.
The other, I mean, I know it was never a 154 player field, this one, but
Yeah, it
my,
was.
again, just after my,
Back in
oh,
the
was
old
it?
days.
No,
Yeah,
but not,
156.
I'm in more recent vintage.
144
I've,
more
again,
recently.
the my concern is the same concern I had at Pebble Beach, a small field, big crowd. I mean, Riv's great to go and spectate on, but it's quite a difficult spot to navigate. You're walking around there, certainly outside the ropes. Not
No,
as many groups.
I totally disagree with that. It's one of the best, it's the best spectator course on the PGA Tour. You can jump around. I mean,
Well,
after LA Country Club, which was really hard to get around, this place is so great to get around. The
I'm
big.
speaking of, I'm hang on, I'm speaking of someone who's been walking outside the ropes, Jeff, for the last few years
Yeah,
when I've been there.
I walk a lot
Well,
outside the ropes. It's
I
great.
anyway, so go on. Right, go on. Well,
Well,
not my
no.
experience.
All I'm
My
going to say is
point is,
the
sorry, go
crowds
on.
may be an issue because of the prices. It's $110 for a ticket and $82.50 for the senior, excuse me, the student rate. There is no student, and these are before Ticketmaster fees. They now have a partnership with the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people at Ticketmaster who are just such a, just such a joy to buy things from. And so yeah, fees too. I haven't even seen what the final total price is. No senior rate. So we'll see. I mean, they sold out last year, Tigers playing, but I think those prices are really pushing it at a time
Well, it's cheaper,
when
cheaper than
players are
Pebble
not
Beach.
exactly. Is
Well,
it?
it's cheaper than Pebble. Yeah, Pebble Beach is 125. Plus, you had to
Wow.
park. Plus, you had to park 15, 20 miles away, up at
Well, and same
Fort
thing here. You park down in Santa Monica and take a bus, and you got to pay for the public parking in Santa Monica. So it's significant.
Anyway, fewer groups, same size of crowd. Let's say the crowds are the same as it have been in past years. Then just gets harder. Again, we can differ on our opinion of what it is like as a spectator at Riviera. It's still great,
Great.
obviously, but especially around the 18th. I mean, that's just a great spot to spend a day. The anyway, the so that I'm looking forward to it, Jeff. I'm sure you are too. I might make it there on Saturday, depending on how things go. Although $108 for a ticket, my goodness, I wonder if you know anybody that can get their hands on a ticket for me.
They've been a little stingy so far, in my
Not
attempts to
really.
take
Not
care of my
really.
cable guy and to take care of
Ah.
some people that I said, look, I'll try. But yeah, so far they've been a little stingy. But we'll see. Maybe if the sales are slow, I'll be able to
Yep.
try to talk somebody into to something. But yeah, it's just, and look, Genesis wants to project an elegance and a certain experience, and that's their company and their brand, and they're very good at what they do. But I just know the history of this event, so it's hard for me to see it become a little, more elitist, basically.
The I hear there's a another policy board meeting this week, Jeff. I wonder is it or is it a party to celebrate the second anniversary of DJ and Bryson's statements that they were going to spend the rest of their careers on the
Yeah,
PGA
that
Tour?
was amazing what's happened in
Yeah.
2 years. And I wrote that
Yeah.
the Saudi golf effort was dead. So yeah, a lot of us are
Oh, did you?
a
Oh,
lot.
really?
Oh yeah, I wrote a good. It was a good piece. It was a little obituary piece. Unfortunately, it hasn't aged well. Yeah, 2 years
Wow.
ago, and here we are. And the word was there was no actual known agenda for this meeting. So I have no idea what they're sitting around and talking about. But it
Yeah.
doesn't seem like anything is happening with the Saudi thing, and I don't see it really happening anytime soon. And things are going well for Liv, and
Well, hang
I
on,
don't
we'll
know.
put a
I
pin
just
in
don't
that.
know. What do you mean? What?
The thing, I mean, I don't know if you how much you saw of the Las Vegas event. It was
I saw the final
pretty
round.
dire. Yeah. The and I saw the viewing numbers were out today. 200, I think it was
Oh.
287,000, I think. Actually, that's
Was
up
it?
on last year. Yeah, but however, I don't know if you watched the good thing from
Oh,
last week.
jeez. Come
Well,
on. Are
hang
you
on. Well,
kidding?
I just jumped because I'm interested in how many people are watching these things. They got over 100,000 on YouTube at one point,
Yeah, yeah.
so which is 40% of the way to the
Yeah.
audience, the TV audience for Live Golf in the final day. I mean, that is so I wouldn't quite be running to say that things are going great for Live, but a little bit
Oh
better than
no.
they were last year.
Yeah.
But I think, again, who knows what's going on? The lack of clarity on the on what is actually going on with the PGA Tour, what's what this money, this investment is going to be used to. Again, we talked about it last week. So there's still zero clarity on that, zero clarity on how the vesting schedule works and who gets what and all that. So the one thing that has become clear, Jeff, to me at least, is that the prospects for the Saudi PGA Tour deal are virtually non-existent at this stage. I mean, given the amount of people who are coming out and saying that these guys from LIV would, you know, will have to face some sort of sanction if they want to come back to the PGA Tour. Certainly, two things on that. One, maybe the LIV guys don't want to go back to the PGA Tour. I sincerely doubt that most of them do. And yeah. Secondly, that is fighting talk. If you're seriously in negotiations, you know, with somebody else to partner up, you're not having your principals and members of the policy board, the player members of the policy board, coming out and basically, you know, fighting talk. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, is it Occam's razor again, or Occam's whatever it is? It seems fairly obvious that their negotiations aren't going well. There's no nearer to any kind of progress. Nothing's leaking out. I think the prospects for that are dire. Agreed?
I agree. Yeah, it doesn't seem good. And, you know, it's fascinating when, you know, one of the things I've picked up again on site is just this sort of, the tour side of things is putting out this, well, we just don't know. These people can't be trusted on the other side. Yasir could have a kidnapping charge that ruins the deal and makes us look bad. They're really consumed with the government being the problem, that the antitrust side or the justice or the Senate committee is going to really get in there and stop this. And it's like, you know, if you're really sincere about this deal or you feel it needs to be done, well, then you need to go ahead and do it and then let those things happen. I'm fascinated by the idea that they feel like they're getting ahead of it. And it's generally tinged with this sort of government's going to put a stop to this because government's in our lives kind of thing. And, you know, I'm fascinated that they would allow that to get in the way of a deal. Seems to me the smart business person is going to say, look, this is the right deal for us. Let's go try and do it. And then we'll see, you know, what's happening on the regulatory side or the Senate side. But they seem to be anticipating a problem that I don't think can be, you could be assured is going to pop up and be there. We just don't have, I don't see the evidence of that, but maybe they are getting, they may be getting signals on the inside like, yeah, the Justice Department's going to shut this down. The problem is I'm just a observer. And from my point of view, it sure looks to me like the world of professional sports, which is very well connected in Washington with lobbyists, is working very hard to try and break the ice essentially on the idea of, sorry to use the word, foreign investment, international investment. And it's like they're all just kind of waiting to see who's going to be the one to do it. And I feel like this group of strategic sports group people are all sports people. They kind of want golf to be the one to do it. And then they'll jump in on their side or their leagues will. So I feel like that's kind of the tussle we're not fully understanding. But it sure seems like the sports world wants that money. Our friends in Qatar and Saudi Arabia are good, good friends, wonderful lovers of democracy, Western values. They want in on sports too. And so it's like we're in the middle of and golf somehow is the thing kind of stuck in the middle of it. And I just think we have to wait it out and see what happens. But I'm shocked that they're sort of anticipating of problems that they seem to be sure are going to pop up. It's like, you know what? Why don't you get the parameters of the thing figured out?
Well,
and then let's go from there. How about that?
Well, or perhaps
if that's your goal, if you're sincere,
or perhaps they just don't want to make the deal and they're just,
now you're getting somewhere. Anymore. I think you're getting somewhere.
Actually, we shouldn't let this moment pass. There was another incredible story last week about the consultants and financiers involved with the whole LIV, setting up LIV essentially been threatened. If you give any of our information or hand over any of our documentation to any congressional committee investigation, you could face 20 years in a Saudi jail. I was reading this story, Jeff, and I won't name the consultants involved. Or certainly, there was a name in there of a guy. I coached his son at Little League Baseball. I can't believe it.
Wow.
And I know the guy. And yeah, so it's a small world indeed. I ran into him in the cinema a few months ago. Next time I see him in the local coffee shop, I'll ask him how things are going. I'm sure I will get a zero answer on that, and that's fine. Yeah. Anyway, and you are right. Maybe let's get it done. But the problem with all this, Jeff, is the longer this goes on, the more damages golf, and two diminished products instead of one enhanced product, and that's going to be the problem until this all gets sorted out. It's certainly not going to get sorted out this year, and it certainly isn't going to get sorted out next year. So you're looking at 2026, 2027. Who would have thought it, Jeff? On that glorious morning of June the 6th, 2023, that in 4 years' time, golf would not be unified.
I would add something to that, to your point about the golf part. Live, whether you like it or not, or like the concept or not, or whatever you think of Saudi Arabia, they're kind of starting to find a place where they're just putting on golf tournaments. And yeah, they have their funny stuff that we laugh at about the team element or whatever, but they're not the ones creating drama. They're not the ones whining about plights or rules or who's in the club and who's not. They're kind of, so far, they've played two events, but they've just gone, played their event, and they're moving on to the next thing. The PGA Tour, again, all the news seems to keep coming back to, what players say, and they'll blame the media for that. Well, the player, when asked, does not have to say, "I'm not welcoming these guys back." The guy should say, "I'm here to play golf." Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
We deliberate in our meetings, and that's not for anybody to know about, and nobody should care anyway. It's boring. They could put it down. Instead, they feed this narrative, and then lo and behold, we've had these great finishes. And they're just kind of like forgotten because the tour narrative is all about our money and our policy, our new Aeon fives and our this and our that. And like, well, Nick Taylor just birdied the five of the last six holes he played. Charlie Hoffman just shot 64-64. They had this great playoff and, bad luck, whatever. It goes against the Super Bowl, but the weather is the weather and it's going to happen. And like, nobody talks about golf with them. They're so consumed in their little clubby world. And they just have lost. They've lost the plot, and they're being outplayed by a thing that has teams called Legion 13 and the clicks and the fastballs and whatever their stupid names are with bad uniforms. But they're getting smoked because they are kind of like finding their little groove of. And by the way, the Las Vegas event, Lawrence, the music was, of course, playing in the background, and John Rahm was getting annoyed by cell phones, which is going to be an issue for him if possibly. Yeah. But they put on a good golf tournament. It looked like the fans were well-behaved. And again, another week where the juxtaposition of the two, I can't believe it, but Liv looked good and the PGA Tour looked awful. And we knew this was coming with Phoenix. It was only a matter of time.
Just coming on to Phoenix, I can't let the moment pass. You're talking about all the players having their say on this, these guys and those guys and this policy and that policy. The one that really stuck in my craw last week was Ricky Fowler. Suggesting that these guys, if they want to come back from Liv, they'll have to be some sort of sanctions. This is a guy, to all reports, everybody's read, spent quite a long time in negotiations with Liv. I mean, Jesus wept. Just go and play golf, Ricky. Same with you, Jordan Spieth, and I think even Scheffler had a word last week.
Thomas,
Tiger, and some Thomas, they all did. Just go and play. Here, we should probably finish up with this whole waste management stuff.
Yeah, let's end on a really positive note. Let's talk about the debacle of debauchery.
Well,
in the desert. Ooh, good alliteration there.
actually, Debauchery of the Desert, very good. Just speaking about Scheffler's technique earlier on, I mean, Charlie Hoffman almost won that tournament. He's 47 years old. What a beautiful
man. There have never been more young players in the – oh, sorry.
Well, yeah. Well, if you look at the list of winners coming through, Jeff, these are all I mean, the Korn Ferry Tour, you know, 19-year-old Pot Guider won on Korn Ferry Tour a couple of weeks ago. Nick Dunlap obviously won. These guys have come, they're all, the guys have all paid their dues. You know, Nick Taylor, I think, is what, 30, 31 or something?
Yeah, and then Matthew
Clark. They're all in their 30s, so they've all paid their dues. Just on Charlie Hoffman, 47 years old, almost winning on the PGA Tour. His technique is, you got to love that golf swing. That is a golf swing that you could put in a textbook and be pretty impressed by. And that's a career. Can I really see Scottie Scheffler lasting another 20 years in the PGA Tour? With the way he swings a golf club, I kind of doubt
interesting,
it.
Interesting, yeah.
The actual tournament itself, won by Nick Taylor, really impressive. He's a good player. You just say, you kind of hope, well, I guess Wyndham Clark did it last year, kind of stepping up from the ranks of, you know, very, very good PGA Tour players, transform themselves into major winners. You know, you look at a guy like Nick Taylor and you wonder, he might be the next one. But we kind of need more of those kind of guys, I think, to kind of break through.
Just a quality person too. Great, great.
Oh, really?
Down to earth. Oh yeah, he came in the interview room today. But I've chatted with him before, and just, you know, he's Canadian, so he's a really nice guy. But he's quality, and that was such a, it was a great final round. It's, again, nobody saw it because I didn't look at the ratings today. I was out at Riv, but yeah, it's going up.
I think it was
Super
one
Bowl.
Point. I think it was one point four or something.
Well, you know, it's just tough going against the biggest Super Bowl of all time and all that stuff. But and it wasn't playing the weather, but it was some sensational golf. Again, those closing holes are. That 17th hole is so cool. It just has so many dimensions. It's got a little of the 12th at the Old Course, and there was Hoffman, who he just needed to lay up off the tee. And this is a topic I'm exploring a little bit with Tanner Riv, and he made par in the final round. But he had to. It was work. You know, he hit in the fairway bunker, and he had that scary. I mean, it's a crazy shot because the water's behind, but it was a stressful par. I'm not saying that cost him or anything, but it's just such a that hole just is what you hope, and it's an original. It's Tom Weisskopf took some Old Course and he took some desert golf, and it's and every year it delivers. Everybody talks about 16, but 17 is the hole that delivers every year.
I actually really like that golf course, Jeff. You probably knocked me down for that, but
I like the finishing holes.
It's a fun golf course to play as well. I really enjoyed it, and it seems to produce a pretty good golf tournament every year.
Yeah.
So I can't knock that. But the I guess the story of the week is all the nonsense that went on. I don't want us to sound like a couple of old men, you know, bemoaning modern.
Oh, I think we're safe on this front, Lawrence, based on the reactions I've seen. Young people too. Everybody's a little embarrassed about this one.
Well, yeah. Well, I did see. I think it was there was a report. I mean, obviously, the video of Zach Johnson having a go at somebody in the crowd over something. hopefully, I mean, it's really
sorry,
bad.
I shouldn't be laughing.
Yeah, if it was me, I'd be shouting at Zach Johnson. What were you doing on the 15th green on the final day of the Open in 2015? But that would have caused quite a kerfuffle. But there seems to be so many videos, and I know the rowdiness is part of the brand, and it's always been a part of the tournament. But I guess I've got a couple of questions. Is it any worse this year? Has it been worse this year? I don't know. Why is there so much more emphasis on it? And why are there so many more videos? Weird.
That's a good question because, people have had phones for a while. But I don't know. I've seen my share of pretty outlandish stuff from the waste management. I guess the difference this year would be a combination of maybe the fact that Liv had a tournament. The PGA Tour is under a little different microscope with the way it's going about things. And I other than that, I really don't know what else to tell you as to why the streakers and the jagoffs and all the other stuff got more play this year, but they did. I, the thing that I haven't been able to explore I do wonder if the heckling went up a few notches, and I do wonder if the money talk and the and sort of the spoiled player imagery that some people have of the modern pro, even though you and I know a lot of those guys have nothing to do with the decision making. Two-thirds of the PGA Tour guys are just out there trying to make birdies and are totally disengaged from any of this business crap and do not deserve the heckling. But you do have to wonder if, like, the combination of the Ryder Cup stuff and all the business talk has made more fans feel like, because you know how it works. The more somebody makes, the more a fan feels entitled to just say terrible things to them because That's they're true. Richer. And I wonder if there's some element of that. I mean, the tournament blamed the mud. I know on the outskirts of the event, the Thunderbirds generally run an impeccable event given the amount of people that are there in terms of parking and getting in. And the fact that you hear that they just, that some combination of the weather, the cold, the mud, the rain made the people at the gates just go, screw it, come on, just come in. Like, wow, that's really off kilter for that event. So I don't but they just didn't make it better saying, well, the money, we still made money on Saturday and that'll allow us to invest in improvements next year. Like, oh my gosh, weird reactions. And you know, at least they're out there trying to mop it up and fix it, but come on, this has been brewing for a long time. They're selling merch that's all boozing and hazing alcohol-y kind of stuff. Yeah. Like, what did you think was going to happen? And you have the first on-site betting parlor that's tour sanctioned. Again, none of this I'm aware of was betting related, but you want betting in golf and then you want to do this. Just remember that those two things aren't going to,
yeah, it doesn't take a lot to draw a line between those two things. You know, that's my thought immediately went to that. Here, what about this one, Jeff? I floated it the other day to a few people that I just thought this weekend might have been an allegory for contemporary American society. Look what was going on, the kind of toxic male culture, toxic male behavior, celebrating stupidity. You know, just general disruption and the lack of respect. I mean, there's so many videos of guys just pissing. There might be families there with their kids. And, you know, the lack of respect for each other, you know, and I just thought maybe this is what America is right now. It's a troubled, broken place. And there's a certain, you know, that subsection of society, particularly that, you know, disillusioned, a younger male. I don't want to get too much of a sociology professor about it, but I think you just kind of wonder. Go on.
No, I think you're onto something. I don't think that's everything that went on there, but I do think you're onto something. I mean, I've heard that has become a kind of an event for that kind of guy and his buddies to go to. And why? I mean, I want people to go to a golf tournament and have a good time. I'm fully supportive of golf tournaments to try to make it a day at a pretty place, and there just happens to be golf. That's just the nature of the sport. That's what you're going to have to do to get people and make it a community event. And they've done that with concerts and great stuff. I just don't understand why it has to go to that next level of just making complete asshats of yourselves and being rude to others, and you can go have drinks and have a good time and laugh. I don't know why it spills to that level. And I think you are onto something. There's a part of the world that feels like they're sort of entitled to, they've been somehow repressed, and this is their chance to let it all out kind of thing. Like I, you know, well, whatever, that's fine, but go have a good time, but you don't have to be taking a dump in the bunkers and I do think the woman falling out of the corporate chalet probably put the police and the fire department or put the tournament on double secret probation going into Saturday after that incident. And I do think that's why we had what we had, which was the alcohol cutoff. I was not aware of how many of those corporate chalets were open bars. I didn't realize. And that's tricky. That open bar thing can be, that's problematic.
You ask why people are behaving like that. I think they're behaving like that because the permission structure has been created. You know, we live in a country of Trump, of, you know, PGA Tour. I mean, I've, you know, there's so many good golf brands around these days. You know, good golf, no laying up, fried egg. You know, and the PGA Tour chooses to get into bed with these barstool assholes. You know, that's...
Oh, like, I knew you were going to get into the stoolies.
Well, but it's true, though. I mean, this is an organization that's incredibly accused of promoting rape culture. And that's who the PGA Tour, you know, so that's the kind of society, you know, that these kind of behaviors create the permission structure for that, for what went on at the weekend. And somebody came back to me and said, well, hang on a second, this is not an American issue, exclusively an American issue, because look at European football, or European soccer, whatever you want to call it. Well, but the difference being that in European soccer is much better. In the 1970s, English football, and in the late 70s, early 1980s, it was horrendous. The hooliganism led to the Heysel Stadium disaster, all that stuff. But at that time, Great Britain was a broken society. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was politically massively fractured. But since then, I'm not saying it's perfect now, but the kind of atmosphere around football is certainly a lot better than it used to be. The problem with golf and this tournament in particular, the behavior and the atmosphere is getting worse. You know, and you have to ask yourself why. It might be a wider societal problem, but again,
well, I think it's, I mean, you know, we both listened to Scott Galloway. He talks a lot about kind of this element of the, you know, broken young man that's an issue, and there's a social media component and some other things. I think there are just a lot of elements to this, and I guess it's just kind of unfortunate because the tournament raises a lot of money for charity. They do it something different every year. But I have zero sympathy because this has been coming for a while. And they've, instead of saying, all right, yeah, we don't want this to get worse. I mean, they're lucky that woman didn't have more serious injuries. So I don't think you can blame Trump, but there has been a change where there is some sort of entitlement of certain young men who probably don't read a lot, or they just feel some sort of rage, and it's okay to act it out in public, and that's unfortunate because a lot of them seem to like golf.
There you go.
And it's a bummer because we also know at the same time there's so many more juniors playing the game. They're great kids, boys, girls, and there's so many more young women and women in general playing the game. And it's like, I'm not saying, you know, we don't want to say guys can't have their fun and have a drink at the golf tournament and whoop it up. But gee whiz, my gosh, come on, Tour and Thunderbirds, get a grip, you know, like,
yeah,
it's just, this was coming and you deserve the egg on your face because you thought, as you know, Lawrence, I'm a big believer this is all related to youth desperation syndrome, and we won't go into that. That's another pod for another day. But
it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure changes are coming for next year. Certainly, I would imagine on the alcohol sales policy. And I think
what
they
is
might
so
not
off?
Go so heavily.
Tell me what goes on.
Sorry, go on.
What goes on in you know, I don't. I'm pretty sure they serve beer at the beginning of the day at the Open and some other events. What is so awful about not starting beer sales until midday? You know, what is so awful about that?
Yeah.
Why is that the end of the world?
Exactly.
And the Ryder Cup, we know they start serving at 7 a.m. And like, what do you think is going to happen? What, do you really need the money that badly? I guess they do. I don't know. And by the way, who enjoys having a beer at 7 in the morning? I don't understand that either, but.
Well, now you're getting grumpy old man stage now.
No, that is not grumpy old man.
I'm very conscious. I don't want to come across like that. But anyway,
I think it's too late.
A wider point to be made. Yeah. I'm going to spend the next, hopefully I'll get to Riviera sometime in the weekend. And then I'm going to go watch some college golf as a palate cleanser down in Palm Springs next week. So that should be fun.
Well, if you come to Riviera, I will explain to you how to take advantage of the best spectator course in golf, and I will explain to you why. I'll show you that there's about three or four spots on the course where you can sit, stand, see drive, see approaches into greens, and get tee shots hit close to you so you can watch a player hit a cool recovery shot. I'm telling you, I've seen courses all over the world. Riviera is still, and Doug Ferguson, by the way, of the Associated Press, who's seen everything and walks the golf course, I do believe is in full concurrence with me on this view that it is, it's the best. So come out and see us.
It must be nice inside the ropes with you and Doug. Anyway, we'll leave it at that. Jeff, another edition of the podcast over. We will talk again next week. Thanks very much for the evening chat.
Thank you, Lawrence.
It's a wide open road. It's a wide open road. It's a wide open road.